Is a class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 9th Chapter, text number 9, recorded on the 25th of July 2015 in Denver.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version, text 9. Tasmai salokam bhagavan sadbhajita sindarsayamasa param nayat param yapeta sankresha vimoha sadvasam swadristavad bir purushaya abhishtutam. Translation. The personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. Purport. The troubles of penance accepted by Lord Brahma were certainly in the line of devotional service, bhakti. Otherwise, there was no chance that Vaikuntha or Svalokam, the Lord's personal abodes, would become visible to Brahmaji. The personal abodes of the Lord, known as Vaikunthas, are neither mystical nor material, as conceived by the impersonalists. But realization of the transcendental abodes of the Lord is possible only through devotional service, and thus the devotees enter into such abodes. There is undoubtedly trouble in executing penance, but the trouble accepted in executing bhakti yoga is transcendental happiness from the very beginning. Whereas the trouble of penance in other processes of self-realization, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and so forth, without any Vaikuntha realization, ends in trouble only and nothing more. There's no profit in biting husks without grains. Similarly, there's no profit in executing troublesome penances other than bhakti yoga for self-realization. Executing bhakti yoga is exactly like sitting on the lotus sprouted out of the abdomen of the transcendental personality of Godhead. For Lord Brahma was seated there. Brahmaji was able to please the Lord, and the Lord was also pleased to show Brahmaji his personal abode. Srila Jiva Goswami, in the comments of his Kama Sandarbha annotation of Srimad Bhagavatam, cites quotations from the Garga Upanishad, Vedic evidence. It is said that Yajnavalkya described the transcendental abode of the Lord to Gargi, and that abode of the Lord is situated above the highest planet of the universe, namely Brahmaloka. This abode of the Lord, although described in revealed scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, remains only a myth for the less intelligent class of men with a poor fund of knowledge. Here in the word sojistavad be is very significant. One who has actually realized his self realizes the transcendental form of oneself. Impersonal realization of the self and the supreme is not complete because it is just an opposite conception of material personalities. The personality of Godhead and the personalities of devotees of the Lord are all transcendental. They do not have material bodies. The material body is overcast with five kinds of miserable conditions, namely ignorance, material conception, attachment, hatred, and absorption. As long as one is overwhelmed by these five kinds of material miseries, there's no question of entering into the Vaikuntha lokas. The impersonal conception of oneself is just a negation of material personality and is far from the positive existence of personal form. The personal forms of the transcendental abode will be explained in the following verses. Brahmaji also described the highest planet of the Vaikuntha Loka as Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord resides as a cowherd boy,
keeping transcendental sarabhikas, and surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Chintamani prakara sadma sukalpaviksha lakshavateshu surabhi abhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasambram sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. The statement of the Bhagavad Gita, yadgatvana navartante tadhama paramam mama, is also confirmed herewith. Param means transcendental Brahman. Therefore, the abode of the Lord is also Brahman, non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is known as Vaikuntha, and his abode is also known as Vaikuntha. Such Vaikuntha realization and worship can be made possible by transcendental form and sense. Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gora Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. What do you think? There is undoubtedly trouble in executing penance, but the trouble accepted in executing bhakti yoga is transcendental happiness from the very beginning. What do we really think? You see, as I often explain when I'm speaking at universities, but not in the same way, Western so-called civilization is really hung up right now on happiness. How do you become happy? What is happiness? Economic acceleration has been stressed for so long, aided by the scientific development of technology. The pace has been feverish. More growth, more economic growth, more technological proliferation. In the midst of this feverish race, people have lost track of what it means to even be materially happy. Where did the happiness go, is the big question. It's not coming through more money. It's not coming through more relationships. It's not coming through more technological innovation. Where is the happiness? So people in the West are very hung up on how to have happy moments. And they're willing to work hard and absorb the whole life in something if they can just be happy for a few moments, a weekend or whatever. That's the best that's expected, and that's considered so sublime. I was happy last weekend. In 3 months, I'll be happy because I'll be on a cruise in the Caribbean or something. Or I'll be backpacking in Thailand or something. It's all about those moments. As for sustainable happiness, that's become the holy grail. First of all, let's try to be happy, and then maybe some enlightened beings will worry about sustainable material happiness. But first, let's just get those moments. Without those magic moments, life is not worthwhile. So that's what's going on today. Such a frantic pursuit. And everyone's willing to work so hard for that. Make whatever changes are necessary. Juggle your job. Change homes. Change relationships without any hesitation. You owe it to yourself to get some moments of happiness. In the process of this feverish pursuit,
especially Americans, are working so hard. Social researchers show that, except for probably Japan, Americans work much harder than every developed economy in the world. For example, statistics show that on an annual basis, when you add up all the hours, Americans work 30% more than Germans. And Germans are known to be very industrious. You know, BMW, Mercedes, Audi, and all that. So therefore, social researchers have nicknamed the USA as the no vacation nation. All that hard work is supposed to lead to happiness. And if you can just be happy for a few moments by being entertained or stimulated for a few moments, that's what it's all about. And then if you are a forward thinker, materially that is, you should be concerned with sustainable happiness. What is sustainable happiness? They define it as happiness that doesn't exploit other people, happiness that doesn't exploit future generations, and happiness that doesn't exploit the planet. Now, all that requires sense control just to achieve those material goals. Why should people care so much about future generations and the kind of earth that they'll inherit? We care a little bit, but generally we think, well, that's their problem. They'll sort it out somehow. Meanwhile, we got to do the best we can to enjoy. We'll try to be a little environmentally conscious, but the bottom line is nothing can interfere with the main program. Your right to be happy for a few moments. You may find in doing outreach that to criticize material happiness, it can produce some defensiveness in the audience, some counter-reaction. Because what else is there to life? There are two things you have to be careful when you criticize in speaking in different parts of the world. In India, you have to be careful. Don't criticize material success. Everyone gets nervous. So, material success. So you always speak about material success and Krishna. Never do a frontal assault on material success. Everyone just look at you politely. They won't say anything, but just... But if you just change the subject, now let's talk about how material success can be connected to Krishna. And in the West, don't do a frontal assault on material happiness. People think, what are you Hare Krishna's about? Are you some kind of killjoys or something or what? You know? People are willing to talk about the frustrations of material love because there's so much relationship chaos these days. The purpose of the relationship is supposed to bring material happiness. So they don't mind you pointing out the realities of the frustrated so-called love. But to make an assault on material happiness, very extreme. But let's consider our own bhakti practitioners, our own devotees. Bhakti yoga is transcendental happiness from the very beginning. The trouble accepted in executing bhakti yoga is transcendental happiness from the very beginning. This requires, this point requires some education and realization to understand. as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, any troubles that have come to him while trying to execute devotional service, he accepts as the greatest pleasure. Now, how could that be? The goal of satisfying Krishna's senses is so absorbing and transforms you and puts you on another level that what seems to ordinary vision to be troubles and austerities for the devotee, for the bhakti yogi, is actually a source of great joy. To know that you sacrifice to please Krishna's senses, that is the predominant overriding reality. Krishna's pleasure. We all have this ability in us to sacrifice. I like to ask devotees, think, there must be at least one time in your life when you really endeavored beyond normal to achieve something. You really went through austerities. You pushed yourself to another level. As the athletes say, you took your game to another level. There must be at least one time in your life when you really wanted something and you put in such a Herculean effort. Why can't we do that for Krishna? I always ask our devotees, think about that time when you really mightily endeavored, more than usual, because you wanted something, someone, whatever. That is your bottom line. You have to do at least that much for Krishna. So in this way, you can have a parameter, a measuring stick, to evaluate our efforts in serving Krishna. I remember when I wanted something and I mightily endeavored. There was discouragement, or there was physical discomfort, or people didn't understand, but I still pushed on and achieved that goal. You have to have some of that in your life, because material life is austere. Even for the wealthiest person, their goals don't just drop on their lap. Yes, they may have money, but money doesn't equate to happiness. Money doesn't equate automatically with relationship fulfillment. But everyone goes through some austerities, anxieties. So the question is, why can't we do that for Krishna? So that we can truly say, the trouble accepted in executing bhakti yoga is transcendental happiness from the very beginning. What is it that makes material goals so tangible, so solid and concrete, whereas the goal of pleasing Krishna, well, that's kind of hazy, you know, kind of nebulous, like a cloud in the sky. Sometimes you see it, sometimes you don't. Yeah. Why is that? It's like that because of our rebelliousness. There's something in us, residual rebelliousness, residual envy. We don't want Krishna to be too real. It's good that Krishna remains a bit hazy, so we have some wiggle room. But just think of Lord Brahma. He's all alone. He's the first person in the universe. He's on the lotus petal coming from the abdomen of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what his duty is. He tries to go down the lotus stem into the water to figure out his situation. And he comes back up to the lotus petal, the lotus flower. He's showing that you can be the smartest person in the universe, which Lord Brahma is, but on your own you can't figure it all out. Lord Brahma is demonstrating that. He himself, through empirical methods, got down in the water and tried to understand what's going on. He couldn't. So he climbed back up to the lotus flower. And then he heard those words vibrating. Tapa. He understood that the sound vibration of the Supreme Personality of God is the same as the Supreme Personality of God. He didn't see, but by hearing, he saw. This is a very important point in bhakti. By hearing, you can see. Because sometimes people say, how can you learn without experience? It's very good that you're reading the Bhagavatam, you're hearing classes, but that doesn't really teach you. You've got to learn by doing. What does Sukadeva Goswami say about that? Pashyanapi na pashyati. After so much material experience, you see, but you actually don't see. You think you see. This is the mercy of Maya. Many births, many lifetimes of experience, but you still don't actually see, although your eyes are open. Experience doesn't teach you. But by hearing, you also see, but you actually see in a productive, beneficial way. Unlike what you think you see through material experience. So Bhagavatam stresses hearing, and then you experience through sound. That's what Brahma's demonstrating. He's smart enough just to hear tapa and sort out his whole life. We're not so sharp. Yet, as Prabhupada points out in the purports, you can get the same benefits as Brahma did on the lotus flower by acting on the instructions that come through the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. You can get whatever Brahma had. And the purports explain that when you are executing bhakti yoga, you're in a position the same as Lord Brahma on the lotus flower. So the question is, what are we listening to and what is shaping our bhakti yoga experience? We should always look for the sound vibration that's shaping our life. Bhakti yoga means lifestyle engineering. That lifestyle engineering is based on sound vibration, what you're hearing. Brahma had guidance from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he followed that guidance in the form of sound instruction, he attained darshan of the spiritual world. He even understood the supreme planet, Goloka Vrindavan. And he's giving his personal testimony. Govindamadi Purusham Tamam Jami. If we want to look for the wealth in our life, if you want to look for the wealth in your life, look for guidance. We were speaking last night about how the real wealth of a bhakti community is the presence of guidance. So that devotees don't reinvent the wheel every year. I was explaining last night that one of the usual characteristics is that when a devotee is in a confusing situation, difficult situation, he or she may often think, I can't ask anyone because this is special, this situation. No one else understands. And this way you become isolated and you try to sort the situation out on your own because no one's been through this before. No one can really understand. Really, there's nothing new under the sun in devotional service. Even devotees who've been practicing for 10 years, they can understand that basically you're dealing with rerun movies in terms of the dilemmas and situations and traps that devotees may get into. Another mistake that devotees make is, besides thinking my situation's special, no one can understand, therefore I shall not reveal my mind to anyone, I won't take any guidance, because who can understand this situation? I mean, yes, yeah, those who are capable of getting guidance, they understand other situations. Yeah, I agree. But this situation, it's different. But the other thing is that we think, well, unless I know that devotee is participating in the Rasa Leela, he or she won't be able to solve my problems and give me good guidance. If I can, while they're sleeping at night, if I can put my ear to the door and hear, do I hear any ankle bells tinkling? Then I know they're on that platform where they can really help me. But otherwise, you know, my problems are really deep and requires a Paramahansa to understand. I can assure you it's not like that. To take advantage of the fund of guidance in a bhakti community, that's the great advantage in life. Okay, it's very nice to have convivial, jovial times with the Prabhus and the Matajis. But the Prabhus and Matajis are also good for something more than good times. You know, Vaishnavas are jolly. They're also grave. So there are devotees who can significantly reduce any perplexities that you have while executing devotional service. There are devotees who have come to peace with their ashram, whatever ashram they're in, and can help others. There's bhakti guidance in general, especially concerning chanting Hare Krishna, engaging in devotional service. There's specific ashram considerations. We should take advantage of guidance. You have to cut wood, so to speak, with the best saw around. Another out that I hear devotees say is, well, in this particular community, there's no one I want to take guidance from. No one's old enough here. All right. Devotional service you've been doing 10 years, 15 years, not good enough, sorry. You have to be practical. Insights into your devotional service and your devotional life can be presented by a sincere devotee who has studied Prabhupada's books and tried to sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure. Right now, the Krishna Consciousness Society has such a backlog of experience in executing bhakti. We were explaining last night, it wasn't like that in the early 70s, for example, when I came along. Yet we all still took advice. If you were a 4-year devotee back then, oh, senior Vaishnava. In other words, we did the best we could. That's all Krishna holds you accountable for. Do the best you can in your circumstances. Srila Prabhupada did the best he could with whatever Krishna sent him. That's bhakti. So you're held accountable for doing the best you can in your circumstances. Consider Arjuna. He was in a difficult situation. A situation so perplexing, so agonizing, that there's no way we can say that we've been in a more excruciating situation. Arjuna's situation was the epitome, the model of what to do. All my options look unattractive. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. So at first he began to try to sort the situation out on his own, just like Brahma went down from the lotus flower into the water. And then finally Arjuna begged Krishna for guidance. So the whole Bhagavad Gita is about receiving guidance. Our spiritual life is all about receiving guidance. So the more that the bhakti community can provide guidance, and it's a two-way street, the more devotees realize that this is real wealth and take advantage of that guidance, the more blissful devotees will be, the more attractive they'll be, the less problems they'll have. Problems will come because the material world's a problematic place. But with guidance, as Krishna promises at the end of Bhagavad Gita, you can cross over all obstacles of material existence by his grace. By Brahma, following the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was able to see Vaikuntha. And, as you heard, the Supreme Personality of Godhead told him, I'm very pleased by your non-deceptive performance of bhakti. You have no other motive, in other words, than to please my senses. This is what we're all aiming for. And this goal takes some training and guidance. For so many material pursuits, we're willing to be trained and accept guidance, on-the-job training, mentors at the workplace. But why is it then for bhakti? Well, that's my own personal thing, you know. You can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me how to do it. That's true, everything in bhakti is voluntary. At the same time, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita are giving us examples of devotees always eager for guidance and grateful for it. Gratitude is so important. Anyone who has ever helped you in your spiritual life, or anyone who's tried to help you, and you may not have agreed with everything they said, but just the fact that they tried, why not thank them? I always try to do that. Anyone who's taken a step forward and tried to give some counsel, why not encourage them? The worst thing that happens is when there's no gratitude and then such persons think, I tried to help, he or she didn't care, that's the last time I'm saying something to anyone. That's a great victory for Maya. Shut down the guidance culture. It happens to devotees doing outreach. It happens to devotees mentoring. They don't feel appreciated. They don't feel gratitude. In fact, sometimes, you know, they get criticized. And so sometimes such devotees in such key roles for stimulating Krishna's service, sometimes they become disheartened. That's it. I'll keep it all to myself. I'm not telling any devotee any more pointers that could be beneficial for him or that's it. Keeping my mouth shut. Just go to the temple, see the deities, chant Hare Krishna. Mum's the word. This is a great victory for Maya. To dilute the guidance culture, even shut it down completely, because devotees are feeling intimidated about being able to say something. We want to tap into the wisdom that's accumulated in the bhakti community. That is wealth. Those are the resources. No matter what ashram you're in, guidance is necessary. Brahmacharya ashram. Simple lifestyle, but still, guidance is required. Grihastha ashram can have the propensity for complexity. Guidance is required. Guidance is based on humility. Lord Chaitanya demonstrates that. My spiritual master told me I'm a fool, I should just chant Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport of that verse, Guru More Murka Deki, Kalila. My spiritual master called me a fool. He chastised me. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that no one should think they're above getting advice. Yet, that's our disease. To get advice, we have to put ourselves forward into the, shall we say, marketplace of guidance and advice. Make yourself accessible so devotees will feel free to say something. It's a two-way street. It can't all just be on devotees who want to help. It also has to, the responsibility rests on the devotees who can always use help. So when you put yourself forward, I'm open, I'm ready. I can only think of one example. I was going through the airport, so I happened to see, because I have these big TV screens everywhere. So there was a sports interview. There was one famous receiver for the Denver Broncos. And the quarterback, he and the quarterback were being interviewed. And they were in their practice regalia, you know, sweat hoodies and sweatpants, and so the TV interviewer was asking the quarterback, you know, you and this wide receiver, you really connect a lot. And the quarterback gave the wide receiver all credit. No, he's so good. He knows exactly where to run to catch the ball. He's always open. And then the wide receiver, I'm always open. I'm open right now. I said, wow, that's how I want to be in bhakti. He's on, you know, he's not even on the playing field. He's being interviewed, but I'm open right now. Where's the ball? I'm open. If I could only be like that in bhakti. I could only be like that. When you're trying to be like that, devotees feel at ease to say something to you. But if you got an attitude, bhakti is my personal affair. I'll go through things the way I want to. You go through things the way you want to. Who do you think you are? My Guru Maharaj? Only he can say something to me. That's a good way to deprive yourself of the riches. Generally, our problems they're not so complex. It doesn't take an incarnation just, you know, to sort out our problems. So let us consider Lord Brahma. He was so sharp as the most intelligent person in the universe that just by hearing two syllables, tup-tup-pa, he sorted out his whole life. That was the guidance. Bhagavatam for Lord Brahma is 4 verses. He can understand the whole Bhagavatam just by hearing 4 verses. So he shouldn't overlook the point that he is acting upon guidance. In his case, he's so fortunate, as the most pious person in the universe, he can get guidance directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we get the same result by following the parampara. We're also on that lotus flower, as was Brahma. The Lord Chaitanya said, "My guru called me a fool. He told me to chant Hare Krishna. So I did. And then all these symptoms started coming over me. What did I do? I went back to my guru and I presented the symptoms. What's happening to me? There's this, there's that." And he said, my spiritual master certified, "You are a successful chanter of the holy name. I thank you very much." So this is the way bhakti works. And especially for those devotees who want to kind of move from the platform of karma yoga to full-blown bhakti. What do I mean by that? There's a very subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. Karma yoga, and most devotees should look up to karma yoga. Karma yoga means you're not attached to the results. You'll give that to Krishna, but you're attached to acting in a certain way. Whereas full-blown bhakti means you're not attached to the results and you're not attached to what you do in order to give the results to Krishna. So, to grow in this way, so that our devotional service becomes completely pure, that takes deep contemplation and association that generates clarity for us. I was just speaking to a devotee who's been very industrious in Krishna's service, taken on many Herculean tasks for maybe 15 years. And clearly the devotee likes to endeavor in a certain way. Likes to be busy, busy, busy in a certain way. And gets things done. But as is common, the devotee is attached to acting in a certain way, which is good for a certain extent of our bhakti development. We do want to engage devotees according to their propensities, without a doubt. At the same time, we should be aware that pure devotional service meets whatever Krishna wants, however Krishna wants it. So I was telling this devotee, I said, "I think it's about time that you reap the success of your engaging your propensities in Krishna's service by being more open to how Krishna wants you to endeavor. Rather than just, this is the way I am, I'm a certain nature, this is what I do." Fine. That has brought about so much spiritual advancement for you. But now, after 15 years or more, you should be open before the deities. Am I doing what you want me to do, or am I just doing what I'm attached to and offering you the fruits? So it's a delicate point. Srila Prabhupada described this as a very subtle point. Because we don't want to criticize devotees who are acting in a way they're attached to, but they're giving the results to Krishna. Most devotees should look up to that. I don't know if I explained last night, but maybe I did. I don't think it's a problem here. But in other places where there's a problem with deity worship and getting enough devotees to sign up for deity worship, often the temple presidents, they're saying that the definition given in the Shastra of a Kanishtha Adhikari is one who simply worships the deity but doesn't know how to treat devotees. So many temple presidents are saying, where are the Kanishtha Adhikaris? We need some help on the deity roster. We need more Kanishtas. Where are they? So we want to encourage all levels of bhakti at the same time, especially for those devotees who have endeavored mightily in Krishna's service, giving the results, honestly acting according to their attachments. We want to let them know that what is the sweet that's available at the end of the meal. Start praying to the deities. I'm accustomed to acting in a certain way, but is there something else you'd like from me? Is there some other way of endeavoring that you'd like to see me do? That opens things up. It increases the love. And certainly, guidance is required. To always ask that question, am I doing this because it pleases me and then I give the results to Krishna? Or am I doing something that pleases Krishna, both in terms of what I'm doing and the results? This is just a deepening of love. We want the final result of devotional service, which is to understand Krishna and go wherever Krishna wants us to go, whether it's the material world or the spiritual world. Wherever Krishna wants us to go, that's where we want to go. Because that attitude in of itself is the spiritual world, is Goloka Vrindavan. This is the mystery of bhakti. This is why the topmost devotees say, Krishna, wherever you want to send me, I'll go. Simply just let me remember I'm your servant. And simply let me be in the association of devotees. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kita Janmahau, I don't mind taking birth as long as I'm... I don't even mind being an insect as long as I'm in the house of a devotee. I'll be a bug, but in the house of a devotee. This attitude means you're already back to Godhead. Being back to Godhead does not depend on what we think is geographic location. Being back to Godhead depends on the attitude of pure love. So I hope by briefly explaining this, you can see that, wow, guidance is very important for this. At every stage of bhakti, the more that your community can be a guidance-focused community, with devotees eager to give advice and devotees eager to accept advice. Of course, qualification is necessary. Qualification to give advice, but also qualification is necessary for those who accept advice and guidance. That readiness is also is a qualification that needs to be there. This is the bhakti life on the lotus flower, just as Lord Brahma. This is our position. Otherwise, devotional service is difficult to understand because you're trying to execute spiritual activities while within the material world. It's like, as I often explain, especially at yoga centers, the bhakti yoga is like living underwater and remaining dry. If you consider Jesus as the topmost yogi, according to the Bible, he hinted at this topmost mysticism. He said, according to the Bible, you have to be in the world but not of the world. Just one sentence like that. No explanation. But in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, you get the whole applied technology the applied spiritual technology for how to be in the world but out of the world. And guidance is an essential part of that technology. How to be spiritual within the material world. This is the greatest mysticism. Therefore, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield to show in the most practical, pragmatic, pressing situation, you can perform devotional service. You can be 100% spiritual.